This is Mondsteinflug, the Sailor Moon podcast where we talk about canon, fandom, and meta topics with our amazing guests.
Hello and welcome to Mondsteinflug, one of the two best Sailor Moon podcasts in Germany.
Today we have
Meso
and Rusty.
And it's the fifth part of our Sailor Moon fandom history miniseries. And our guests today are naturally Tina Century and Flora One. Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, and before we get right into the next part of the fandom history, we'd like to talk about a few things that people have replied and discussed about previous episodes, especially a question that Tina put onto her Tumblr. Yeah, Tina, and what was that post? And
yeah, one of the things that we talked about in, I don't know if it was the last episode or the one before it, we were trying to figure out why it was that people in North America weren't necessarily as interested in the Cloverway dubs of S and Super S, and also related to that, why there was so much less Usamamo fic set around S and Super S, at least back then. And some of the stuff that we had come up with was greater accessibility of subtitled content, potentially growth in terms of, you know, when you're an adolescent, a two-year gap between the end of the Deke dub and the beginning of the Cloverway dub is kind of a long time. And Beege actually brought up that it might be because they changed Serena's voice actress, and a lot of people didn't like the new voice actress. And so a lot of people responded, like the post has like 90 notes 90, on it now. And honestly, the biggest thing that came out to me, I mean, that everybody had lots of really interesting perspectives, but the one that I'm honestly kind of embarrassed that I didn't catch was basically a lot of people felt that the erasure of the Haruka and Michiru relationship really turned them off from the Cloverway dub. I had the post on, and now, okay, here we go. So Luna Whiskers has this really long response to it that I think was really, really good.
Brilliant, yeah.
Yeah. Basically, you know, Cloverway had kind of promised that they weren't going to do as much editing as Deke. And like we talked about last time, they didn't. They kept a lot of the Japanese music. They kept a lot of stuff. And the way that she said it was basically that everything looked really, really promising. And even the first few episodes with Haruka and Michiru, they didn't really explain what their relationship was. And she says, everybody was growing tentatively excited. Were they really going to do it? Would they allow the implied romanticism stand without trying to hand wave it away? I believe it was three episodes in when the news came. They're cousins now. Suddenly characters are calling them those cousins every few minutes. It seemed like the writers had perhaps tried to get away with just not saying anything about Amara and Michelle and had gotten strong directives from higher up to make them cousins and do it now. That killed the hype good and dead. Who cared if the music was the same and the scenes were uncut if the characters and story were going to be altered so severely? This wasn't the show we wanted anymore. So, yeah.
But no flood of fix. No fanfics that righted these wrongs. People were just turned off, it seemed.
No, I mean, I've never really read Haruka and Michiru fanfiction, so maybe there was. I'm not sure. But one of the other things, and I can't find the post because there are so many. Somebody else responded with basically, like, Haruka was a character who looked like me and who was like me, and Cloverway completely changed that. And so, you know, again, I'm kind of surprised that this didn't occur to me last week when we were talking that, yeah, of course, you know, if you suddenly have more access to these subbed episodes into the original, and you have more knowledge of who these characters actually are and who they're supposed to be, and you see that this adaptation has, you know, bastardized and sanitized it. Yeah, of course you're not going to be as interested.
Yeah, I've got it here. That's DRSCM, and that resonated with me too. That reply, because yeah, I would be very upset, and I'm always upset when someone changes Haruka.
Yeah. And a lot of people also talked about, and this is interesting because obviously this is the same in Japanese, and I think a lot of people feel this way about the Japanese one anyway, but, you know, a lot of people don't like Super S that much. You know, it doesn't really explain.
Understandably.
Yeah. And so people you know, a couple of the things people wrote in terms of the answer for why there isn't as much fic around this time, around these seasons. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, because obviously you guys had all of the episodes, but the argument was that there's not as much to work with in terms of Usagi and Mamoru content in S and Super S.
I have a complex opinion about this.
Yeah, go for it.
And it's basically twofold. One, I think this has been mentioned a lot as well, is that Super S was intentionally more childish. It was a story about Chibusa, basically. Usagi was basically losing all the growth that she'd gained in S. S was very, very, had mature themes, had very serious undertones for what they were doing. And Stars Had Again. But Super S kind of dropped the ball, I think, a little on that. But they did that intentionally. Like, if you go into the interviews, this was intentionally done. And this was, we had an episode about Ikuhara a while ago. Super S was also the one of the reasons why Ikuhara, at least that's how it's reported, left the series, because he didn't like the way the series was going into themes that were not as serious as they were in S before. And so I think that's one thing. It was suddenly the Chibusa Super Show. But then again, I've read that too, that of course, and that's absolutely, I think, one of the points, it was established relationships. And we are very used to getting romance stories or romantic depictions in general, where people are either getting together or they're in some kind of conflict, but not that moment, or they have to work through something together like they did in the dream arc in the manga, but not this resting phase for Uzumamo, which I personally find it's very sad, because I love established relationship in a way, and I think that's very underrepresented. And I think it's sad that we find that boring collectively.
Yeah, I can't relate at all to that, because I don't ship the dramatic time before they get together. And if we look at the musicals, sometimes we have Mamoru and Usagi as a battle couple.
Yeah.
And they are working seamlessly together, and that is amazing. They just come and they own the stage. If the chemistry between the actors is great, it's even better. I love that. And one also, a lot of fan fiction that I know is about Hotaru. I've read a lot of Hotaru fic, and I wonder why people weren't really latching on to her.
I love having written Tomoe and that S and Stars, but Tomoe especially, I love writing that. I feel hesitant to write it again, because I felt I explored it so much, but I loved writing it, and that's honestly fanfiction I'm missing. Of course, it's not very shippy, and most fanfiction we do have is shippy. But yeah, I mean, one of my favorite Uzumamo episodes is an episode in S, and it's basically, it's a moment of S, but Tuxedo Mask is not jumping in later, waiting around until someone's in danger. He's there right away, and he's introducing Sailor Moon as the main act.
Yeah, I love that part.
I love it so much.
Mm. Yeah. So I found the post that right before we started recording, I was having trouble finding.
Yeah.
Thankfully. And a couple of things. This is from somebody on Tumblr called Little Blind Mouse. And what's interesting, so they have some thoughts on the dub, on S, and on Super S, and on how these things compare to the manga. And so a lot of people did confirm that they hated the new voice for Serena, for Usagi. This person said she sounded like my mother playing a teen. But what's interesting is that they say about S, the anime gives Usumamo writers no drama to work with. In the manga, they have an arc. There's jealousy and miscommunication. Then they talk things out and grow closer. And then for Super S, they say, I couldn't finish the anime. It's obsessed with Chibiusa, the blandest senshi, and makes Usagi act like a toddler to show how mature her daughter is. The manga has a mature Usagi, a sweet Chibiusa, and the best finale, in my opinion. Mamoru's insecurity arc ends with him coming into his power. Usumamo become equals, and everyone contributes in their princess form.
Mm-hmm.
Usumamo and the manga are a team. They share messiah visions. She gets sick with him during Super S. They have the same dream. But basically what this person says is their anime counterparts barely connect. Once they get together, they as a couple and Mamoru as a character get no development. I'm not shocked that writers have little interest in S and Super S. I thought that was...
I do agree in many points. I absolutely agree. Because, honestly, Dream is one of my favorite manga arcs of all, exactly for all the points that they just said. Because Mamo was coming. It's an arc about Mamo and his powers and gaining confidence in that and making this into a narrative for Uzamamo and Tipuzo as well. So 100% agreed on that. I do still think it's very sad that in the absence of drama in that way, or something to work with, that a relationship that is being portrayed as sweetly as it is in S, is seen as boring.
Also, seriously, every couple who has a small child in Tibusa's age can tell you that is not the boring stage of your life.
It's a good point.
You're going to go through so many things. Yes. Hello, Rusty.
That's funny.
Yeah, but that really is not... There are so many challenges if you're a young couple, a young family, and if you're a battle couple also.
Yeah.
I really don't like it when writers find nothing to write about a family.
I mean, though, too, I do think... I mean, the relationship between them was sweetest to me in S and Super S in parts. There were really sweet parts about
S
Super
is
S.
So nice.
But there were still... There was also room for growth, I'd say, on how you portray a very sweet romantic relationship. I think the manga still has the enemy beat lengthwise in that regard, even though they don't have that long period of just undramatic established relationship. So there's that too, maybe.
I think
yeah.
so.
Yeah.
But no, I think it was a great discussion on Tumblr. I'm
absolutely
glad
yeah.
it blew up the way that it did. Sorry that we haven't been able to answer everybody individually, but we did read them all and thought it was all really interesting. And again, I apologize for not even thinking like, oh, there's a Haruka Michiru erasure thing. Of course, that's going to make people not interested in it. So
I do also love how, I mean, there were so many good points. There were so many great things said in this discussion that it's possible to talk on a podcast about something and to make this happen. I think that's amazing. Especially there's people who aren't actually active in the fandom anymore who took part in this discussion, which I think is absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Savvy Literature who says, my pen name is in the word cloud.
Yeah. It's
really
amazing.
Awesome.
I love it.
Yeah.
That was fun. Yeah, that's great. And we bring it into this episode for all the people who are not on Tumblr and did not read it because we think it's so many good points have been brought up. I'm a bit slow to reply sometimes in these discussions, but I'm really, really happy about everyone who brings up their very good points there.
Thank you all for that one.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. I think we can now continue with the fandom history. I give a very short recap of what we did last time. What happened so far. And last time we had a very short episode about the years between 2011 and 2014. And this is a very active fandom and fan fiction era. Actually, it was the time where I posted Sailor Moon fan fiction. So this, really resonated with me. And even though it's a short time, it is a very specific time, and that they announced Crystal, but it wasn't there yet. It created a lot of expectations. There were also new manga releases. And we talked about all of these things. And now we are in the year 2014. And...
Twisters on the horizon, yeah.
Things are speeding up. And because you two are the much bigger Crystal fans and much more involved in that time frame, I guess I'll just let you two talk the most and a lot. So,
like Meza said, this last era that I kind of identified based on the timeline and the testimonials I collected, I've titled it Sailor Moon Crystal and the Uzamamo Fanfiction Renaissance, so around 2014 to now. So the two big subheadings here are Sailor Moon Crystal, and then some new North American dubs, and then the Usamamo fanfiction renaissance. So if you recall, if you all recall from the last episode, Crystal was announced in 2013 with the 20th anniversary. Was it 2013 or 2012?
I think 2012.
2012. Yeah, 2012. Toei announced Sailor Moon Crystal. And then it premiered in 2014 in July. Before that, though, real fast before I jump into that. So all of the North American dubs that I've mentioned in all of the previous episodes, all of those dubs and subs, actually, all of the licenses had expired for those, for the companies that distributed them. And in May of 2014, Viz Media acquired the entire Sailor Moon series to dub it in English and also create new subtitled episodes. So this was a big deal in that it wasn't super widely available before, and there definitely wasn't an unedited dub done before. So yeah, basically they've been releasing those since 2014, and they just released Stars last year, the dub anyway. And also Viz got the rights to Crystal.
It is uncensored, I think.
It is, yeah. Completely.
So that's a very big thing.
Yeah. But anyway, so the big thing to talk about here is Crystal. So Crystal premieres July 5th of 2014. And I think I mentioned on the first episode that I watched the episode and I wasn't super interested.
I was in love.
I was, yeah, I was going to say. So I'm going to turn this to Flora on her opinion on that one.
I mean, I touched a little bit on that in our very first introduction episode, but Crystal for me was a big deal, like a huge big deal. I know, of course, a lot of people were disappointed in a way because they expected something new for some reason, which I honestly, personally, never understood, because to us it was pretty clear that it was going to be a faithful adaptation of the manga.
Right.
And so that's what I was waiting for personally, and I was in love. I watched the first episode, which of course is of the manga and of the anime, because it's almost exactly like the first episode of the anime, of the 90s anime, very similar, and I cried all the way through. But yeah, it was more pastel. I mean, you all know Crystal, but it came for 2 weeks on Saturdays on Nico Nico. They streamed it directly in several languages, with subtitles in several languages, which was amazing. And it was a worldwide release of a free website series of my favorite thing in the world.
And I also felt that they finally acknowledged that they have a big international fandom.
Yes,
and
yes.
They made really nice subtitles, and you could watch it at the same time as people in Japan.
Yeah.
We made Nico account for it and watched it whenever the episodes came out. Yeah. For a while.
One of the notable things, it had two Chinese versions, the simplified and the Mandarin Chinese, and the Mandarin Chinese subtitled versions, which is a huge deal because in China, Sailor Moon was banned for a very long time. And they made it available free for people in China to watch.
It's interesting. Yeah. One thing, and I wasn't around in the fandom when this happened, so Flora, you can probably speak to this a bit more. Yeah. So like I said, when I watched it in 2014, it wasn't that I didn't like it. It was just, okay, it's fine. And it was in 2018 when my friend, I spent the day with her once, and she was like, hey, have you watched Crystal? It's actually pretty good. And I started watching it, and I remember being like, oh my god, this is so faithful to the manga, and it's Manga Mamoru, and this is so good. And so when I heard about all these Crystal Wars and how much people hated it, I don't get it. So can you talk a bit about that? Because I don't know much about it other than people are like, a lot of people hated it. And I'm like, okay, cool.
I saw it online. I was a consumer of it, basically, too. I was there for it, but I wasn't active for it. I didn't participate in it yet. And honestly, it put me off the fandom for a little bit. It's one of the reasons why I didn't join back in for so long, even though I was an avid Crystal watcher, because I was very put off. I think there was a lot of disappointment in very many directions. And I think Antigone too actually put it very well in a post she made years ago during those during that time, where she wrote that she thought some people who were disappointed with Crystal were expecting the pink glasses of their childhood, the tinted glasses of their childhood, of something that was very nostalgic to them, and had to feel as nostalgic as remembering Sailor Moon felt, but not actually how Sailor Moon might have been to them. And I think that puts the nail on the head for a lot of these discussions that were happening during that time. People were very frustrated, for one, that the animation wasn't consistent. There were a few floppy scenes, definitely, and they all got brushed up later for the Blu-ray version. But I think people had very high expectations of it. And I remember the argument going around a lot, because this is Sailor Moon, and it's such a huge franchise, it's so important in the world, why don't they put more money in it? And that completely disregards the fact that this was a passion project. This was a free web series done for the fans. It wasn't making a lot of money in Japan at the time. The series not at all, because it was a free web series, and they did their financing completely through merch. And it also forgets that shoujo and shonen manga have lots and lots of different funding in Japan as well. Shonen gets funded very, very much. Shoujo, not as much at all. And so these high expectations for something that was a reboot of an old show before it was so common to do reboots yet at all, I think made people there were a lot of emotions running high. And I'm personally very relieved that it's died down and people are more happy with Crystal these days.
Yeah, one thing that I think Irritable Vowel said about that, and now I'm trying to find where I have my testimonials, I think they were open here, was she was saying that she was kind of dreading the release of the Eternal movies because she feels like it's going to bring it up again.
I don't think so. I think we're loud. But yeah.
Yeah, it's just interesting because I feel like, I don't know, again, I wasn't around for that, but a lot of people that I talked to referred to Sailor Moon Crystal Wars and how kind of controversial it was. And so I feel like when I showed up, I was like, wait, people don't like it?
Yeah, exactly.
But okay.
I mean, I think that's also a general fandom thing, not even so much a Sailor Moon thing, but reboots are getting treated so critically, and there's often this argument, like, you're ruining my childhood by redoing something in the wrong way, which I find very sad as an idea, because of course your childhood can't be, someone's not going and altering the show you watched as a child, even though you don't like the new reboot. And other people can still enjoy the reboot, even though you might not like it. So I'm very much in favor of everyone has their right to the version that they prefer. And a new version doesn't replace the old one.
And one thing that Antigone 2 said was, Sailor Moon Crystal was an issue because people who didn't like it thought everyone else shouldn't like it. And people who did like it got offended when people didn't. And there was some bullshit moral high ground on both sides in the whole thing.
Yeah. And we really should know better by now.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the other big thing to mention with Crystal, so like we talked about last week, we kind of had, so with Antigone 2 coming back, that kind of set the stage for more fan fiction. But the other thing that set the stage was obviously Crystal. Yeah. So one of the things that some people said was basically that Crystal is what either got them in or in more cases brought them back. So Queen Risa said she used to watch the VHS tapes of Sailor Moon as a kid when her parents would get them from the library. And then in 2016, she found out about Sailor Moon Crystal, and that got her back in and eventually got her into writing fan fiction. And then Beej also says, I discovered Crystal by accident when I was 28, and I was totally in awe of it and how it fixed all the things I didn't like about the anime. Another person, Danny Bunny, also said they rediscovered Sailor Moon because of the new Crystal series. So Crystal definitely contributed hugely to the kind of resurgence of the fandom. I don't think it was the only thing, if you go back to, you know, the Kodansha re-release of the manga and stuff, but it was a really big part
of a really big thing.
It is a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So
how many of the episodes were put out as a web series? Were all the first three seasons on
I think they ended all up on Nico Nico, but the continuous, the first two seasons, what they just said was Sailor Moon Crystal. They didn't say it was season one and season two. That was premiering on the web series first. And for the third season, with a bit more funding, it was airing on Japanese TV first. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had it somewhere in the back of my mind that they did get onto TV at some point.
Mm.
And in Germany, we first watched it with the subtitles, and there was absolutely unclear if we would get a dub, but we did get a dub. And
It's on TV now.
Yeah. And we already said in a previous podcast, the guy in charge of the whole what's the title of the whole
the voice director for the German Crystal dub
is the former voice actor of Tuxedo Mask.
Oh, cool.
So he is really enthusiastic about doing Sailor Moon again. He talks about it on conventions, and they got the same voice actress for Sailor Moon from the first season of German Sailor Moon. So she sounds familiar. It's really nice.
Yeah. So in the US, what started happening, so Viz started releasing them on Hulu, the dub, or I guess the original subtitled ones, and then eventually released Crystal on Hulu as well. I don't have the exact year in front of me, but...
Oh, so yeah, when you said that Viz Media acquires all of Sailor Moon, that includes Crystal?
Yes, they did. Oh. Yeah, they got the rights for Crystal as well.
It's so right. It's here in the outline. Thing. Yeah, sorry. I didn't see it in time. Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah, so that was the other thing. Just, you know, you're able to access it on Hulu just like any other show was kind of a big deal here as well, I think. Although for me, this is not super relevant, but I'm going to say it anyway. The subtitles on Hulu, they're really light and I can't read them. So it's really not that helpful. Or at least the last time I tried to watch it on Hulu, I had to sit really close to the TV. So maybe I just have really bad vision.
Mm.
I mean, I think one thing with Crystal too is that a few people are disappointed by the way that it's now becoming movies, and that it and the animation wasn't in one thing. Like, it changed platforms in between season two and season three, and it not for the international viewers, of course, but for the Japanese ones at least. And then it became movies, and I think a few people were very disappointed about that. But I'd like to point out that the Japanese anime market is vastly different to what we're used to in form of serialization, because here we're very used to only waiting for half a year and being sure that a series that started is finished. But that's just not the case for Japanese series. There's many, many animes that get a season and then have a few years hiatus wait if they get continued at all. And I think especially because Shoujo and Sailor Moon, we'll get to that in a later episode as well, but Sailor Moon is not as widely spread in Japan as we assume, and anime isn't either, even though that's the biggest export in Japan. Of course, it's still widely available and people read manga a lot, but it's not getting as much funding as one might expect from the way it's internationally successful. I think putting expectation on something that is basically a reboot of something that's a gift to us, I always felt that we could maybe be a bit kinder to it.
I never saw it as a gift to us, because all the other Sailor Moon forms, like the musicals or the real life series from 2003, were not gifts to the fans. They were works of their own standing.
Absolutely, yeah.
And something really, really positive to say about Sailor Moon Crystal is the title song.
True.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So the other stuff that kind of, basically Crystal also, I mean, I don't know if this is what kicked off some of this. I assume so. But basically, so between kind of 2014 and 2019, you have a lot of random kind of fandom events happening where, for example, a permanent Sailor Moon store opened in Japan in 2017. Universal Studios Japan had a Sailor Moon attraction in 2018 and 2019.
I've been to both of those. I've been to both of these.
How was that?
Well, I mean, the Sailor Moon store is, that's also a big thing because it's one of the first, it's the first permanent store we had of Sailor Moon, but it's also one of the first permanent stores in general for shoujo anime. It's a small store in a department store in Harajuku in Shibuya, and it's very sweet, very dedicated. They have a lot of the merchandise that they also have for exclusively for the official Sailor Moon fan club in Japan. And basically all of the official merch that's usually being released at the time in very small numbers. Two sides of it, one side that's very pretty and small, and the other side that has more of the luxury goods that are being released for the older generation of fans.
Do you know if it still exists?
It still exists. It definitely still exists. Then Universal Studios, that's the 4D shows they did in... basically, the background to that is that Universal Studios in Osaka did an exhibit that was called Cool Japan, and they had lots and lots of different themed rides. There was a Conan ride as well, but they also had this 4D show for Sailor Moon. It's being renewed. The last I heard of it, I seen the first, they had a second. The first was basically classic. The second was more of an S kind of situation. And yeah, it's amazing. It's really great. Then there's Shining Moon Tokyo, which I had tickets to and will now never get to go because it had to close down because of COVID. It's breaking my heart. And that was the cafe, the show restaurant, of which there are several themed restaurants are a thing in big cities in Japan anyway. But this one was for Sailor Moon. They had a small musical number show that was international, and they only got to open in 2019, right in the middle, smack in the middle of Azabu Juban, and I had tickets. And then COVID came. Yeah.
The other kind of big thing, so these things are happening in Japan, and then obviously in 2017 they announced that Crystal will be the next season of Crystal will be two movies, supposed to be released in this year, but obviously also because of COVID moved to 2021. And then the other thing that I thought was interesting that happened around this time was you also had Sailor Moon the Super Alive come to Paris, DC, and New York City.
Yeah.
So you kind of basically you have these Sailor Moon musicals going on outside of Japan. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I thought that was really interesting.
Absolutely. I mean, I think giant thing. I absolutely agree. The whole period of time. I mean, there wasn't only like stuff like the Sailor Moon store. I've been to Japan exactly in that time three times, 2014, 2015, 2018. There's pop-up cafes. Suddenly it's everywhere. There's exhibition where Naoko's art is taking part. And it's with this kind of new air changing a little bit of the scene and how it's visible, it's also happening elsewhere in the world. And I mean, that's amazing. Who would have thought people would get to see a Sailor Moon musical live show in New York?
Mm-hmm. And the fact that they conceptualized it that way, they reduced the text, they increased musical numbers, right with the intention to bring it to an international audience with knowledge of Japanese. So yeah, it just feels nice.
The announcement of Sailor Moon on Ice
to be
which not only is it it's an international project. Yeah, it's an ice show for Sailor Moon done by an international cast for the Olympics in Japan.
Okay, but that is really, really cute. Because
it's amazing.
Ice skating is a thing in Sailor Moon, as we know, and there's this ice skater. What's her name? Medvedeva.
Evgenia, yeah. You know.
Evgenia Medvedeva, yeah. And she did a Sailor Moon
routine, yeah, she did.
With a complete transformation on ice, because she's such a fan, and Naoko Takeuchi was thrilled and made her an art piece. And
yeah, there's a photo of the two of them together with an autograph.
And from them, that, it spiraled on. So this figure skater is now going to be in that new ice skating show, and they gathered more skaters, and it sounds really, really great. So I hope they do it.
Yeah. So I don't have personally insight on how the Sailor Moon scene in that way was in the 90s, if there were pop-up cafes or stuff like that. But I think it was very much more oriented, at least in that time frame, to a celebration of something that you used to love that felt very nostalgic in all ways.
And also a difference is, if you ask how it's done before, for PGSM, they made it really for very small children. They aired it in the small children's morning program, and then they made a stage show, a live show where all the girls were singing and the Shiteno were menacing the audience. And yeah, it's amazing. Everyone needs to see it. But if you look into this audience, the girls in there are tiny. Okay, as Kinsato says, I'm also here for the moms. Yeah. And the moms were also here for him. That was also nice. But yeah, I was really kind of surprised, because PGSM really spares you no heartache. It's very dramatic. How can you show this to very small children? It's much too dramatic. I would have died if I had been three and watched that. I'm surprised. Sailor Moon is a story about teenage girls, even if we know it was initially made for a much younger audience. And PGSM was made for the much younger audience, and they marketed the live show by people had to buy toys, and when they sent in the receipts, there was a raffle. So they could win tickets to this show if they bought toys. So it also, the whole live thing was marketed to the 3-year-olds, the 4-year-olds, the 5-year-olds. And yeah, that was really astonishing to me. But we have now seen this very often. There are a lot of Magical Girl series where the Magical Girl is 14, but the actual main characters are much younger.
Oh, okay.
I'm actually really interested. In Japan. And that used to be a thing.
The new thing is that Crystal was not made for small children.
Exactly.
They can watch it fine, because they can identify with Chibiusa, but that explains the popularity of Chibiusa also. She's the identification figure for the younger viewers. But the whole marketing for Crystal was aimed at people who saw Sailor Moon when they were small, who are now older and are ready to spend more money on the merch.
I think that's a very big deal, and I think that's a very big reason for the change. And I'd be super interested if the testimonials say anything about that, because my perception of it is, because it was specifically marketed towards women in their 30s, the ones that would have been 10-ish, like my age, that would have been 10 as they watched it the first time. And everything in Japan is marketed towards that, be it the web series thing, the times that it aired on TV, when it aired on TV, and be it the merch that they release more quality items, fewer quality items, things like cups and saucers.
Mm-hmm. Handbags,
makeup, etc. And I think that's a thing that's swapping over to the US as well. We have collabs that are very much more grown up in that way. And I think that's also, to me, one of the reasons that I was so very readily embracing it, because
they made
it was
this for
made
you
for me.
They hit their mark.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. So there wasn't anything that really came out about that in the testimonials, but that is a really interesting point. And I think it's, you know, potentially something to discuss more for sure.
Editor's note, there are a few minutes missing here. Sorry if it now sounds mid-topic.
I do know that it wasn't as marketed as much in Japan as it was internationally, but the phrase Sailor Moon as a feminist icon was very much a thing for the Crystal release, so much so that it made its way into Moon Pride in sentences. And I do think, in a way, that Crystal does, at least to me personally, very much reflect this unapologetic femininity in the way the colors were framed, in the way it was really Naoko's vision of them instead of that definitely male gazy thing that changed a lot of the characters later on. For the 90s anime, we talked about that a lot about before in the podcast about Rei and Mamoru, that they changed back and they let him be as soft as Naoko had seen him. It was also, I mean, Naoko was very involved in the process as well. So I do think that's something that I value for it as well. It was allowed to be pastel, it was allowed to be girly, and that this girliness in the third wave of feminism that it became an icon for was something that was allowed to be viewed as completely powerful.
And so that had a lot of meaning in Crystal, but that's of course the different viewpoints.
And that's a different viewpoint, yeah. And I mean that's just also,
I'm happy for everyone who sees that in them in Crystal.
Yeah.
Because that's what we want from Sailor Moon.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm really happy they it was seen like that in Japan, because in Germany I've never seen anywhere anyone calling Sailor Moon a feminist icon.
I see that everywhere.
Doesn't 4-1 live in Germany?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Huh?
Sorry.
I do live in Germany, and I do it a lot. And
yeah.
Especially, obviously, we've talked about that. I was a bit more into Crystal at the time, so I paid attention to it.
Yes.
And that was the way it was marketed. And that's also the way.
Yeah.
That's also the way it's marketed on Six now. The channel that the channel that is broadcasting Sailor Moon in Sailor Moon Crystal in Germany at the moment, which is a channel that is dedicated most purely to a female audience. They are marketing it as the feminist icon of our generation, and so it is a thing. Definitely a thing here.
I think that's a good discussion. Unless you guys have anything else on Crystal, I'm happy to kind of shift to the next heading, if that's okay. Okay.
Just for a second, we might have to cut this out, but is this a good cut?
We're at 47 minutes.
From the outline, it looks like we're completely in the nibble. We're shifting to the fanfiction topic now.
Yeah. And I mean,
if you were
to split it, this would be the place to split it, I think.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's a good argument. Yeah.
Then seeking into
we should do the part about where. Yeah, okay.
No, but I think a small introduction from Tina, what's coming next in the next episode.
Okay. All right.
And then where we can find us.
Okay. All right.
So yeah, that was a great discussion about Crystal and kind of the new North American releases and all of that. So on the next episode, and it's still within this broad theme of Sailor Moon Crystal and the fanfiction renaissance from 2014 to present, we'll talk a little bit, or probably more likely a lot, about the Usamamo fanfiction renaissance. So, again, being an Usamamo person myself, I don't feel like I'm a good enough authority to speak on other fanfiction within the Sailor Moon fandom. But basically, right now, I feel like we're in this kind of renaissance period where we have a lot of activity within the Usamamo fanfic world. And I want to talk about kind of some of the themes that have come out from that and the history of that a little bit. So that'll be the main focus for the next episode. And then that ties up all of the chronological things that I've identified.
Okay, great.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, looking forward to it, even if I wasn't actively writing, but it is a great, great fandom time. So, Tina, where do you wish to be found online?
Oh, you can find me on Tumblr, on AO3, and on fanfiction.net at Tina Century. I write Usamamo fanfiction, and I'm happy to chat anytime.
Yeah, and Flora?
Now, all these three places as well, AO3, Tumblr, and fanfiction.net, under the pen name Flora Run, and I'm also very happy to chat.
So, thanks again to the both of you. And you, if you're listening to this, you probably already know where to find us. Our Tumblr is misomondstein.tumblr.com. And we are going to upload the episodes on AO3 in the future. But right now, the Tumblr is where you find the new episodes and also discussions around the episodes. So, then off to the next part of this really exciting era. Bye.
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 That was Mondsteinflug. Do you have comments?
Questions?
A topic you want to suggest?
Do you want to come on our podcast?
And talk about your favorite Sailor Moon things?
Leave us a message on mesomondstein.tumblr.com.
That is mesomondstein.tumblr.com.
This is a podcast under a Creative Commons license.
With no commercial use whatsoever.
Thanks for listening. Until next time.